Do you believe in the redemption of all things? Yeah? And see, I mean, for me, that's the great hope. With 9/11, I believe that one day that gets redeemed, that horrible thing. I don't like 9/11. It still bothers me. I'll be honest with you. I'm really happy when it's like on Wednesdays, and like we can give it a nod at church, you know what I mean, and show a different video, flags and stuff, and we'll always remember and all that stuff. And the problem is that I do remember, and it takes me back to a place where I'd really not like to go, because on that day for me, anyway, I don't know how you look at it, but everything changed. And, you know, the thing is that I've been scared since. And I don't mean like, oh, I'm terrified. I mean, it's always in the back of my head. It's always lurking in the shadows. So no matter where I am, I'm always looking. I'm always watching. I'm ashamed to say, but yeah, I'm always suspicious. Is that your backpack? You know what I mean? I mean, I'm sitting at the mall and I'm counting backpacks. Do you know what I mean? Isn't that ridiculous? But it really shook the world. And Grace and I were supposed to fly to Latvia. We were supposed to teach for a month, September 12th, 2001. And I'll be honest with you, I think part of the reason that it affected me so profoundly was that, you know, I was only about a millimeter from being completely burned out just by sheer volume of people's needs at the last church. And I needed that flight on September 12th, 2001, because I needed to go somewhere for 30 days and teach people and not think about everybody else. And I needed a time of restoration and renewal, if you will, where I could still be useful, but I could just get a good-sized breather. And so when we started planning that day that we would have evening services and we'd be praying with people and all that kind of stuff, I just looked at my boss and I said, I can't do it. I've got nothing left. I am on fumes. And so he said, well, you weren't supposed to be here anyway. Go home. It's nice to have a lot of resources like that. And so I did. And I think we flew out on the 14th. And, you know, I came back and the world was different. But I still remember the pain, the sorrow, the fear. And like I said, it's still carrying it around. And so my hope, my expectation is that somehow this gets redeemed and we don't have to live with that kind of fear anymore. And I wonder, what does it take? And I think what it takes is God. And so that's my approach today. As we read these scriptures from Philippians, we're in the fourth chapter now. And I want to tell you something. I'm not going to read the whole fourth chapter because on the 25th, I got a closer. Mike Wagner is going to come back and he's going to preach from this. And he can say more about the first three verses of Philippians than I've said in the whole, or the first three verses of Philippians chapter 4 than I've said in the last, you know, 10 weeks. I want to start with verse 4. Rejoice in the Lord always, Paul says, and I'll say it again, rejoice. Let your gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is near. Do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your request to God. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. And whatever you have learned or received from me or heard from me or seen in me, put it into practice, and the God of peace will be with you. I rejoice greatly in the Lord that at last you have renewed your concern for me. Indeed, you were concerned, but you had no opportunity to show it. I am not saying this because I am in need, for I have learned to be content, whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do all things through him who gives me strength. And again, finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. And whatever you have learned or received or heard from me or seen in me, put it into practice, and the God of peace will be with you. Paul puts an awful lot of stock in what we think about. So the question, I guess, to begin with is, well, what do you think about? Are you anxious? Do you worry? Do you think about what might be overly much? I watch, my kids. Kids are great. They are amazing. And you see things in them that you never would have seen in yourself, but you can, like, read it back and say, oh, yeah, I do that too. And, I see this tendency to grab hold of something, to think about it, and to think it, like, to death. Do you know what I mean? I mean, just not let go of it. You see something on TV, it's a 10-second shot of something. It's an ad. It's even just part of an ad. And you can't sleep 8 hours later because it's in your brain and you keep thinking about it over and over and over and over again. And see, there's a tendency that we have to do those kinds of things. An event like a great tragedy like 9/11, we think it and we let it inside and we think and we think and we think and we think and we think. And of course, it's facilitated by the fact that we've got 24-hour coverage of everything over and over and over and over again. And just in case you missed it, we're going to start at the top of the hour with it again and do it again and again and again and again and again. And it can form the way that you think. And another question I have is, how is the way that you are formed, or excuse me, how is the way that you think formed? Have you ever thought about this? I thought about this a lot with the kids when it came time to start with school, because I think what I was afraid of was that we were going to send them into a situation in which they would not be taught how to think. Does that make sense? Because I'm not sure, and I say this, I mean, I'm not trying to offend anybody or anything, teachers, all the rest of the stuff. I'm not sure that that is the purpose that we have in education. In other words, I don't think that the purpose that we have in education is to teach a kid how to think, like systematically, so that it can be applied to any given situation. Rather, what I think is that we give them situations and tell them what it is they're supposed to think about it. Does that make sense? And then that informs the way that they look at the next thing and they start relating experiences and things. Well, that's like this, so I need to feel this way or think this way about it, instead of let's break it down and let's start somewhere and say this is our first step and this is the second step, this is the third step, like a Socratic method. I remember we had this crazy August Janssen. He was a Dutchman who was born in Indonesia and grew up in a Japanese prison camp. And somehow, through the wonders of migration, he wound up teaching my high school class. And I don't know how this came about, but there he was, and he was trying to teach us to think like Socrates. You begin with the premise and you move out from there, and it's like, wow, okay, this is a very systematic way to think. How is it that the way that you think is formed? Sometimes I catch myself and I think that the way that I think may be, if I think this way or act this way, what will other people think about me? Do you ever do that? And it's like, that's bizarre, because that's not thinking. I haven't even responded to the thing in front of me. I'm responding to the people around the thing in front of me. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, when you think about it, right? But then I think we're all kind of busy, and so maybe we're not thinking about how we're thinking. We're just getting through stuff. We're just processing. And we're trying to move everything to results and to solutions as quickly as we possibly can, because we are confronted with more things that we have to think about. Not to mention all the stuff that's stuck in here, right? And we can't get it out. And that's where Paul comes around and says crazy things like, you should be renewed in the thinking of your minds. Oh, could I? Could we just get baptized and have the whole thing just washed out? Do you know what I mean? Wash it clear. It's wring it out like a sponge, because it's all wet, it's heavy, and it's pretty dirty too. So, could we get rid of that? and that. And this is where I think he starts with this, finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. In other words, think about the things that really matter. And what are the things that really matter in light of eternity? Jesus. See, the gospel really matters, doesn't it? And remember, I'm trying to teach you a three-word definition for the gospel. Remember, the gospel is Jesus is Lord. Now, what if there's a Christian way of thinking? And by this, what I mean is Jesus, the smartest man in the world, came and he asked us to repent and to believe the good news. And what if that is the foundation of a way of looking at the world called worldview? What if it is the way of a system of thinking and looking at things that is different than the way that the world looks at it? It would be a system that is absolutely focused on God. It would be focused on the things that are eternal. It would be focused on the things that are above. It would be a system that is focused on whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable. If anything is excellent or praiseworthy, that would be where it all began. And what is the most true, noble, right, pure, lovely, admirable, excellent, and praiseworthy thing in the universe? Has to be the gospel, right? I mean, Jesus is Lord. So Jesus, or the gospel, if you will, the good news of Jesus Christ, becomes the foundation, the starting point for everything it is that we think. And so when confronted with something, even something as horrible as the tower coming down around us and running down the stairs and all the things that are flitting through our mind, the foundation of our thought, the place where we need to get back to begin this process is this: Jesus is Lord, and because Jesus is Lord in this situation, therefore, blank. Everything's falling down around you. Your life is a mess. Maybe you're not caught in the Twin Towers. Maybe you're caught in debt. Maybe you're caught in broken relationships. Maybe you're caught in depression. Maybe you're caught in loneliness. Maybe you're caught there. Here's the thing. Your foundation, your first thought, your first premise is, because Jesus is Lord, what's true about this situation? I'm not alone. I feel lonely. But I know that he's with me because he promised to never leave me or forsake me. And that is true, and that is admirable, and that is excellent, and that is praiseworthy. I'm sick. I might die. Because Jesus is Lord, I don't need to worry about where I'm going. Whether I live or whether I die, I'm his, win, lose, or draw. This is going to be okay, ultimately. And because it's going to be okay, ultimately, can I find the strength to deal with what is happening currently? And how do I respond to it? Peace, love, joy, patience, goodness, kindness, self-control, mercy, and so on. Because the foundation of what it is that I'm thinking is Christ. Now, you can say, well, all right, that's nice, a pie in the sky, it's very fluffy, thank you, Pastor John. And I would say, okay, but then go back and look at Philippians, and Paul talks a lot about thinking. Chapter 2, right, he says, if you have any encouragement from being united with Christ, if any comfort in his love, if any fellowship with the Spirit, in other words, if you're on board with this Jesus thing, if you have any tenderness and compassion, then make my joy complete by being like-minded. In other words, think the same way about these things. If you want to be in Jesus, good. There's a way of thinking. There's a way of being like-minded that makes you his, that makes you in Christ. And then he goes on. He says, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Theory, that's where most people think from. Ambition and vain conceit. How do I get ahead? How do I get what I want out of this situation? That is our default thinking. To be renewed in our minds, though, he says, but in humility, consider others better than yourself. Consider. Have you ever thought about the word consider? What does that mean? Think about. Consider in a crossword. Begins with a C, right? It's a six-letter word that replaces three words to think about. Consider. Consider or think about that others are the interests of others are better than yours. Remember what we talked about 2 weeks ago? Consider the interests of Christ above your own. Think about the things of Christ above your own thinking. In other words, your thinking is only going to go so far. It's going to be human. It's going to spin out of control. It's going to clutter your brain. Instead, think about the things of Christ, which are true, beautiful, admirable, noble, good. All that list. And then he goes on. He says, your attitude, where does our attitude come from? I got my pastor attitude on, right? Where does your tude come from? It comes from the way that you think, right? When one of the kids walks into the room, you know, and, you know, does the thing, you know, whatever they do. Their attitude, right, is you're against me. Walk into the room expecting trouble. What do they get? Trouble. Why? Because they think that that's what's supposed to happen. What if you walk into the room as a follower of Jesus looking for whatever's true, whatever's beautiful, whatever's noble, whatever's above reproach, whatever, you know, all that stuff? Because Jesus is Lord, I walk into this room and I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm ready for it because he's here with me and we're going to take it on. It's different. So your attitude should be the same as that of Jesus, who, he says, did not consider equality with God as something to be grasped, but he made himself nothing, taking on the very nature of a servant. In other words, what did he do? He didn't consider equality with the Father as something to be held onto. He violated his own interest in order to exalt the interests of the Father so that ultimately we can be exalted through his suffering, death, and resurrection, through his obedience. It's a completely different way of thinking about things. And I think that this is what Paul is up to. And he's trying to teach them, look, here's the deal. I have learned to be content. How did you learn to be content, Paul? Whether I have a little or whether I have a lot. How do you do that? Well, here's the thing. I know that I can do everything through Christ who strengthens me. Really? And that's the place where he starts. Because I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, I can be in want or I can have everything. It doesn't matter. I'll be content because he's in control. And if he's in control, who's not in control? I'm not in control. And if I don't have to be in control, I don't have to think that I need to be in control. Does that make sense? And that frees me up to think about things that are beautiful, beautiful, noble, all that stuff. It's a change that brings about a change in our thinking. It brings about a change in our attitude, and this is, I think, the gospel way of thinking, how it plays itself out. Okay, this is what Jesus teaches us about that as a method of thinking. Remember, if you want to be first, what do you have to do? Become last, right? Isn't that a different way of thinking? Do we exercise that way of thinking? You're in the drive-thru at Bebop's. I do not think about being last. I think about what the heck is wrong with the four cars in front of me that they cannot move in an orderly fashion through this line because all I want is that one burger. And you take that and you apply it to every situation in my life and you'll understand why I'm... Get out of the way. I know what I'm doing. I mean, wait a minute. Back it up. If you want to be first, what do you have to be content with? Yes. Okay, we'll get our burgers. If you want to be the greatest, what do you have to be? Least. It's a completely different way of thinking. But as a starting point, wow. So now you walk into the room and what do? You go take the greatest place or the least place? Seat, You know what I'm talking about? Which one? Greatest or least? And that's where you start. You walk into the room and there are all the famous people there. And because you run a nonprofit organization, you need to shake hands with all these people and you need to tell them how great they are because they're going to give you money or whatever. Or you go find the wallflowers along the side of the room, the ones that aren't talking to anybody, the ones that are leprous in their social skills. And that's where you hang out. Because that's Jesus thinking. It's gospel thinking. If you want to be a ruler, what do you have to become? A servant. If people persecute you and hate you, what do you do to them? You love them. Again, complete, right? I do not have to turn the other cheek if I was slapped unjustly. This is my the way that I approach my marriage too frequently. And that's the thing is, wait. It doesn't say anything about whether the slap was just or unjust. When you're slapped, you don't get to slap back. You have to turn the other cheek. It's hard. I mean, it's a completely different way of thinking because the thing that I want to do is I want to sue somebody because this bad thing happened to me. I got rights, you know. And Jesus had rights too. And yet he left them all behind. And he suffered in silence and he went to the cross and he died for us. How about this? When you're cursed, what's kingdom thinking on this? You bless. Wow. Good news for people on 235. When you have a party, you invite those who invite you back, or do you invite the ones who can't invite you back? Can't invite you back. A completely different way of thinking. And all of it is wrapped up in love, which Paul tells us is this. It's patient, it's kind, it's not envious or boastful or proud or rude or, ready for this, self-serving. It's not that. You don't love because you get loved back. It's not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but it rejoices with the truth. It always protects. It always hopes. It always trusts. It always perseveres. Jesus went to the Gentile counties. He touched lepers. And here we've got, you know, Jesus today. Where would he go in our city? And are we there as his body? These are the big questions for us. And, you know, I mean, I don't think we need to be worried about being overwhelmed by things. Why? Because I can do all things through him who gives me strength, right? Because Jesus is Lord, I can do that. Because Jesus is Lord, I don't have to be afraid to go to the strange places. Because Jesus is Lord, it doesn't matter if people reject me when I go to the strange places or the familiar ones. It just doesn't matter because it's about him. It's not about me. And if we live that way, well, I think in such a way, the world gets redeemed through a change in thinking that brings about the reality of what Christ did on the cross to the here and to the now. And it makes that kind of resurrection power available right here, right now.